Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Gatorade.
A lot of what I do is to kind of inspire women to reach higher than they believe they can.
Hi, my name is Stefania Gumlidza. I'm a sports content creator and I love basketball. And today we're here at one of my favorite gyms getting in a quick workout. So I kind of have a crazy life story. I was born with my legs completely turned in. To be at the top of my game, it takes a lot of dedication and hard work. What I like about the Gatorade GX app is it puts your fitness goals in the palm of your hand.
You hear those cracks in my knees.
You don't have to be a pro to get pro workouts. The app also offers nutrition and recovery guidelines as well.
How do I feel today? I feel great every day. We're ready to go.
So if you want to catch me on the courts, make sure you download the Gatorade GX app.
Ahoy, Mets fans. We're back with another podcast because shit keeps happening. I am Brian. With me tonight are Lucas and Allison. And friends, tonight the Mets made two major moves. They brought back Brandon Nimmo on an 8-year contract worth $162 million?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also signed reliever David Robertson to a 1-year $10 million contract. As Anthony DeComo tweeted about an hour ago, the Mets have spent almost $400 million on new contracts this offseason, which represents just over 2% of Steve Cohen's reported net worth.
Having the richest owner absolutely rules.
I don't know how he's going to buy 3 new papier-mâché art installations, you know? Won't someone think of the art?
Exactly. But anyway, so, you know, this is a new feeling as a Mets fan, just to have all of these players show up in relatively quick succession. You know, Allison and I were talking off the air about how 6 days ago she and I podcasted about how DeGrom was no longer a Met and how things seemed pretty bleak at that point. And I don't think I could have ever expected all of these moves to have happened in just 1 week. And since we recorded yesterday, the Mets traded for a lefty reliever from the Rays who happens to be a homophobe. So fuck that guy, but he's our homophobe, I guess. And also took an interesting arm in the Rule 5 draft. There's just a lot happening with the Mets right now, and it can be a little bit dizzying to talk about. So let's just start by focusing on Nimmo. Allison, what was your optimism of Nimmo being a Met at the start of this offseason?
I'll do an aside quickly before I get to like my percentage certainty that Nimmo was going to stay on the Mets and say okay. That I don't think we want to know if Nimmo had been a Tampa Bay Ray, what he would have done on Pride Night. I'll just throw
Correct.
That out there real
Correct.
Quick.
Yes.
That said, as far as like if I had to go like 0% means like I don't think I was not confident that he was going to come back at all. I didn't think he would be a Met next year, to 100% he was going to be a Met. I don't know. Like I think my confidence at the beginning of the offseason would have been like 40%.
Lucas, was yours wildly different than that?
No, I mean, I think that sounds about right at the start of the offseason. And it quickly dropped for me. It seemed like all the signs we were getting were that Nimmo would not be back with the Mets. And as I am wont to do in the Mason Avenue Slack, I would not shut the fuck up about the importance of re-signing Nimmo. Like, in my mind, this was the most important move for them to make this offseason. And for much of the last, I don't know, month or so, it seemed like the Mets were content to let him walk and sign Kevin Kiermaier to play center field instead. So I was pretty pessimistic on this front as of, like, I don't know, 3 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the combination of his agent, Scott Boras, and the amount that was spent on starting pitching this week and the knowledge that apparently the Mets are still in on Senga despite all of this, I really thought that the Mets were going to prioritize pitching over everything else this offseason, and we're going to maybe go a little bit bargain basement on a center fielder to further facilitate that. But it appears that was an unfounded fear because the Mets are trying to do everything. And so I would have said at the beginning of the offseason, they're about a 50-50 shot of Nimmo returning. If you would ask me on Monday or Tuesday, I'd have said about probably a 40% chance of him returning, maybe 30% chance of him returning. And, you know, here we are. And yes, the contract is quite long, but Nimmo's offensive skills seem like the kind that will age pretty well. You know, he has one of the best eyes in baseball. He does not chase pitches at all. That sort of stuff doesn't tend to go away. He will not be a center fielder probably for all of this contract, but he'll be for enough of it that we don't have to worry about that right this second. You know, the biggest concern for me is just that he has not been healthy the entire, not even, I mean, almost no player is healthy over the course of their career thus far. But he has only had, I think, is it two seasons where he didn't miss significant time with injury?
That sounds right. And I think it's actually been the last two seasons, though. And I think that has to count for something. And certainly earlier in his career, he was dealing with knee injuries that bordered on chronic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, he missed time in 2021. What am I talking about?
Yeah, didn't he have was that the hamstring or...
Did he get hit by a pitch?
That's probably likely.
What the hell happened to Nimmo in 2021? I don't remember. Certainly as a prospect, though, he was dealing with some kind of recurring knee issues to the point where there was pretty widespread consensus that he had lost enough athleticism that he wasn't going to project to center field anymore.
Yeah, just noting 2018 and 2022 are the only seasons he played more than 100 games.
Yep. I mean, he played the whole pandemic shortened season, but who knows what would have happened there.
Right, right.
Look, I'm a sucker for OBP types, and Brandon Nimmo definitely falls into that bucket. He's arguably got the best eye in baseball outside of Juan Soto and Joey Votto, and might even be better than Votto at this point, since Votto's in the twilight of his career, unfortunately. I agree with you, Brian, that he's a skill set that's going to age pretty well. Like, he's not dependent on high-level athleticism. He's not dependent on a lot of raw strength. His defense in center has improved enough in the last couple of years that I think you can leverage it for the next 2 to 3 seasons, and then Starling Marte is off the books, and you put Nimmo in a corner instead. I think there's a pretty natural transition point there in a couple of years. And if you're paying Brandon Nimmo $20 million a year between 2027 to 2030 to be a high on base percentage, solid defender in a corner, that's still a pretty valuable asset right there, I would say.
I mean, that's essentially what Mark Canha is doing for them now at the same price.
$13 million now is going to be the same as $20 million in 2026.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think the most important thing here is that there were literally no options aside from Nimmo, right? There was nothing else the Mets could do in center field that was going to be adequate. We've heard talk about moving Starling Marte to center field again. Starling Marte is 34 years old and just had core muscle surgery. That's not. They didn't sign Cody Bellinger, who might have been the next best option. They weren't going to sign Aaron Judge for that massive deal he received from the Yankees, and I don't think anyone was going to really sign him away from the Yankees. The trade options are like Brian Reynolds, who isn't a real center fielder, and that's the end of the list. And then you're left thinking about, like I alluded to earlier, Kevin Kiermaier starting center fielder. Which is a pretty bleak picture, right? Like, the Dodgers can get away with maybe having Kevin Kiermaier as their starting center fielder because they're good enough everywhere else. The Mets do not have that luxury. At least to me, this was the move they had to make all offseason, and I'm very glad that they either knew it the whole time and were bluffing, or finally realized it and said, fuck it, we'll pay the man. And this is very good. It's something that absolutely had to happen.
Yeah.
And this essentially makes Nimmo a Met for his entire career. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, like he might get, like, it depends on what, like, how this contract goes, obviously. And he might, you know, end up with like bouncing around at age, you know, like 36 or whatever. But like, that's not, position players don't usually end up like having much of a career in their late 30s, except for the select few, right? And so this is really like this is the man's career right here. And now he's going to be a New York Met for basically his entire career, or at least his entire prime, which is kind of cool. And like, the Mets have an opportunity now to, like, you know, sign, extend Pete Alonso and maybe even extend Jeff McNeil. Obviously, that would be like a much smaller extension than the Alonso extension, but like, then you kind of have like those three guys plus Lindor as your core for the foreseeable future. And that's pretty cool. That's like something to build around, actually.
And that's also not accounting for if their, you know, rookie played 10 games so far catcher turns out to be the real deal also. Then you've
or
got
Brett Beatty turns out to be the real deal.
Right. That, you know, then you have 5-6 guys. Now, granted, none of those guys are pitchers, right? But you have five or six guys to build around, and you know, then you can do a lot. There's lots of creative things you can do if you have that core that you know is going to be there. Now, here's my big Nimmo question, because I think that Nimmo is going to be essentially the bat the Mets sign this offseason. There might be some, you know, a bench piece here and there, but I think that the amount of money they're committing to Nimmo and the amount that they're going after with Senga, with, if that happens, I don't think the Mets are going to make another big offensive splash. One of the problems with the Mets down the stretch was their offense just died. Do we feel like this is enough going forward?
Yes and no. Look, if you look at the aggregate numbers, the Mets had a pretty good offense overall. I should have prepared. I know what I'm doing. Let's use Fangraphs because it has the easier leaderboard. I mean, the Mets had the third best way to run graded plus of baseball last year. And that stat's not perfect, certainly, but that counts for something, right? Their offense was quite good, 60% above league average for the season. And they had an unfortunately timed slump there at the end, and they are also kind of middling in terms of power. They're like middle of the 16th in terms of ISO, right? So it's definitely an on-base percentage, singles and doubles-laden lineup without a lot of speed, as opposed to one that's going to bop you out of the ballpark a lot of the time. So I think big picture, they're probably fine, but it might have been nice to get a little more thump into the lineup just to change the shape of the offense. At the same time, I don't know how you do that given the number of entrenched pieces on this roster. Like, where are you inserting? Who are you upgrading over with a real power bat given the current lineup without spending $40 million, $400 million almost on Aaron Judge or something?
Yeah, that's the Aaron Judge was really the only way, right? Unless
I would argue
some sort
Trey
of,
Turner
like,
was a
giant
way as well.
Trade. Yeah, Trey Turner, but he's not a blow your mind power guy.
No, but yeah. I think, look.
And he'd be leading off too, so that's just a lot of solo homers he might hit.
I would just say that at a certain point, if you keep adding enough Trey Turner, Brandon Nimmo to your lineup, it sort of takes away the need for as much power. Because those guys are just on-base machines. And if everyone's on base that often, people are going to score.
Yeah, I mean, that was the 2022 Mets, right? I think it's right. Fine. Like, I mean, like Lucas said, like, they had an unfortunately timed slump. It's hard to say how much of that was stochastic and how much of that was, like, they were all exhausted by the end of the season. If it's the latter, then that's kind of like a systemic problem of the roster being, like, a bit aged. You know, except for like Pete Alonso, basically, like, pretty much everyone is like 30 or older. I mean, Francisco Lindor, is Francisco Lindor 29?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But I think Pete and Lindor were slumping a bit
at the end
the
of the season.
And
yes.
It was like, it was the is Eduardo Escobar going to drive in six tonight? Yeah, no, yeah. Then we're going to lose.
It was the month of Escobar came alive and like everyone else disappeared, right? So
yeah,
like I don't know if the fact that the lineups, the average age of the Mets roster is quite old is the issue here, or if it's like just if it was just like rotten luck, right? Because like the Mets offense overall over the course of the entire season of much larger sample size, like it was very good. So yes, like just yes, on paper, I think that what the Mets have done is sufficient.
I would like to retract my Pete slander real quick. He had a 161 weighted runs graded plus in September and October. My memory is garbage. Sorry, Pete.
I would also like to say that, and I've said this on a number of podcasts, and it's almost always met with groans. So I'm just pre-warning both the co-host and the listener here. I think that if you had replayed the last 10 weeks of the season 100 times, Darren Ruff would have been better than he was 99 of those times.
I don't think you're wrong.
And I think that if Vogelbach did not get his hamstring injury that he got, he would have had a substantially better second half as well. And if those two guys just had, you know, equaled a passable DH for the Mets, I think that the Braves would never have caught the Mets. It would have been very close, but if those two guys could have contributed a win or two to the stretch Mets, I think it's a very different postseason.
And I think the offense will be, at least going into the season, the offense should look better, right? We don't have J.D. Davis and Dom Smith at DH. We have Daniel Vogelbach. That's an upgrade. I still think they're going to wind up carrying Francisco Alvarez over James McCann on the roster, and maybe I'm overly optimistic on that front, but if they do that, that's an upgrade as well. The best thing I think they can do, and we didn't even mention that Starling Marte being out of the lineup down the stretch really did actually hurt
yes,
a lot.
Yes, hurt quite a bit. Yes.
Huge problem.
So I think, and you're looking at an outfield situation, we've already talked about Nimmo's health challenges. Mark Canna needs to have his hip managed pretty extensively. And Starling Marte has a checkered health history in his own right and is also 35. Going to be 35 next year or 34. What was missing from this roster last year, among many other things, was a really competent fourth outfielder. So I think that's something they need to add here so that they can more effectively load manage these guys. And hopefully that allows you to keep things together better down the stretch. And I'm not trying to, I mean, the Mets deserve a little bit of credit because they did a better job than in years past of load managing, but it was with guys like Travis Jankowski and I mean, Tyler Naquin was okay. But you want to do better than that when you're load managing. Maybe that gets you an extra win. Maybe you're okay then benching Marte for an extra couple of days, things like that. And that in turn might allow you to keep the roster healthier. But just in terms of a big addition outside of like signing Carlos Correa to play third base or something, I don't know that there was really a way to make a significant upgrade to this offense without trying to shuffle like Vogelbach out. And I don't know that there were a ton of really feasible ways that would have achieved that.
That's fair.
I also think that like you can, if this goes back to if Brett Beatty is the real deal, right? Like if Brett Beatty is the real deal, then you can use Eduardo Escobar as a DH option, which is like that is an upgrade over Darren Ruff.
Yeah, and then you have both Escobar and Luis Guillorme to play kind of all over the field and give folks exactly a day off. And I know that Guillorme, that's his primary job, but if you can have two folks that can do that, without totally losing offense because of it.
And Guillorme had a fantastic season last season. If last season is like what Luis Guillorme is now, that's great for the Mets. Like that's a huge plus for the Mets.
I think in an ideal world, they go into next season with the starting lineup we all expect. So I'm not going to say Alvarez starting at catcher, but then Alonso, McNeil, Lindor, Escobar, Canna, Nimmo, Marte, and then a bench of Nito, Guillorme, Ruff, and then a real quality fourth outfielder. Like, that'd be the ideal situation, because then, to Allison's point, you're not reliant on Brett Beatty, but if he's killing it in AAA and somebody gets hurt and he comes up and works out really well, suddenly you can start shuffling whoever is struggling from that bench group in and out as necessary. And I do think it's pretty, like, I think there are some quite serviceable fourth outfield options on the free agent market. I don't think they're done adding by any means there. That's kind of the last piece that's missing on offense for me. And then obviously finding someone to take James McCann. Like, does anyone want a lightly used James McCann? Please?
Bueller? Anyone? Bueller?
The problem is he's not so lightly used.
He didn't play that much last year. Like,
Yeah, that's true. He didn't play that much last year.
That's true, I suppose.
Possible fourth outfielders. Yeah, the annoying thing is that the handedness doesn't quite line up, right? You almost want an extra righty to platoon with Vogelbach, and also a lefty to spell Ruff, and Marte. I think I'd lean towards getting someone who's a lefty hitter. And then you're looking at someone like, I don't know, Corey Dickerson, not a bad option.
Robin Michael Grossman. Conforto, come on down.
Hey, I'd be here.
That's
for
not
it.
A bad idea. I'm not opposed to Michael Conforto being the fourth outfielder.
I'm pretty sure he'll want to sign somewhere where he actually gets to start.
And I think he will get a starting job somewhere.
Yeah, like he probably should. Like some bad, like the Tigers should give him 600 at bats, or the Angels should give him 600 at bats, something like that. Ben Gamel is okay. It'd be nice if there was a real backup center fielder here as well, but I don't know that there is one, and you could live with putting Mark Canna in center every once in a while. I think, like, it's not catastrophic. So I just sign one of these guys, so we're not reliant on, I mean, the Mets have basically zero outfield depth. They have to do something here. So
they don't even have Cenk Mangum anymore, you guys.
Oh God, no. Panic. I mean, I liked, look, like Jeff and Jared didn't even put Cenk Mangum in the Mets top 20 prospects at Baseball Prospectus, and they know more than me. Certainly I had Mangum in the Mets top 20, but this is a thin system and he wasn't a top 20 guy. Like, let's all take a deep breath. Trading him for Eliezer Hernandez and Jeff Brigham is still a good deal. The world is not going to end because we gave up a 27-year-old fourth outfield prospect.
Exactly. And I think that is something that people look, we all love hugging prospects. I get it. Totally get it. And he may wind up being something that is, you know, better than we had anticipated. But that's the price of doing business.
Doesn't matter when your team is owned by Steve Cohen and you can simply throw money at any problem.
Exactly. Exactly.
Maybe Raymel Tapia, though I've never been a fan of his. Again, someone Jeff would probably be very excited about the Mets bringing in.
I mean, that's not a bad idea. I like his swing is awful, but
I hate Raymel Tapia. Just aesthetically,
but like as a fourth outfielder, it's like not the worst idea.
Yeah,
it's better than like any of the internal options that the Mets
do better than Travis Jankowski, basically.
Yes, yes, that's essentially the goal. Or like Tyler Naquin.
Yeah, well, the hard part is that Naquin actually sort of is like the platonic ideal of what you'd want a fourth outfielder to be, just a little bit better.
But yeah, a guy want a little better.
A guy that can fake it. I guess in center field, maybe for a couple of innings, but is really a corner guy who has some power, who has a little speed. Like that's you want to, your fourth outfielder kind of has to be a jack of all trades, right? And Naquin was almost that, but not quite.
I think I'm like, as I'm flipping through the MLB trade rumors free agent list here, like Ben Gamel strikes me as maybe the best option here. He fits that stretched in center, but fine in a corner description, at least historically. I'd have to check what his Statcast numbers were this past season. But in terms of splits, he had a last season, he had a, come on, Mouse, 112 weighted runs created plus versus righties and a 56 versus lefties, right? So you can use him to spell Marte and or Canna against like bad righties. You can very easily make sure he never sees a lefty if he's a bench bat, and you can actually extract some value from him at what I imagine would be a very low price. Like, I don't think Ben Gamble's getting a ton of money from anyone this offseason.
Ben Gamble, I'm looking at his Savant page now, and outs above average, 8th percentile.
Ooh,
that's okay. Not good.
I did not
that's
know
not ideal.
Defense had gone that low.
Not great.
Bob. To be fair, like, any of the names we're mentioning could very well sign with the Mets in February.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, 100%.
There is no real urgency here. Speaking of urgency, you know, we had talked yesterday about how the Mets were throwing a lot of bodies at the bullpen problem, but that we felt like there maybe needed to be one or two bigger signings to make things feel more comfortable. And right now, we can say that that process has begun with David Robertson signing a one-year, $10 million contract. Now, usual caveats apply. Relief pitching is a notoriously volatile projection system, but Robertson's been as consistent and as successful as any 14-year veteran I think you can talk about from the bullpen. It's a one-year deal. You know, as many have said, there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal. $10 million is not a lot of money in today's baseball terms for a player of Robertson's quality. He has found ways to win despite having a high walk rate. His strikeouts are still very high on a rate level. Somehow he's still striking out over 11 per nine innings as of last season. And, you know, I think I'd prefer Ottavino if it was an either or, but it's a pretty close contest for me. And I think there's still a chance Ottavino comes back too. So what do you folks think about David Robertson?
No complaints. That's a great signing. On a 1 year deal, especially. Heck yeah. I'm all in on that. That's great. I mean, I wanted the Mets to trade for him at the trade deadline desperately because they really needed another relief pitcher. They get Mykel Givens instead, who is not as good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know David Robertson. I know the struggles that David Robertson had down the stretch. I know. But I think that's because he was used very heavily. We'll say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because everyone else in that Phillies bullpen is terrible.
Yeah, it was basically him and Sir Anthony. That was that was it. That was it. And so I think that it was just a bullpen management and usage problem. And in the Mets bullpen, he won't be as heavily used, hopefully. It's a great signing. And now the Mets bullpen is starting to look a little more filled out. Given the trade that they also made that we already mentioned. Yes, the guy that got Brooks Radley is not the best as far as his views, but he's a good pitcher, that much. Mm-hmm. I'll say.
And more Mets probably side with him than we want to realize.
Oh yeah.
Look, Limo, that there is quite possibly the greatest tweet ever. The greatest Rich tweet ever was not even made by Rich after the Nimmo signing, saying that he got what his favorite president couldn't get. 8 years.
Yep.
Sorry, it's Brooks Raley. I keep referring to him as Boo Radley jokingly. Yep. and it's leaked into my, now I just call him Boo Radley without Joe me Radley. Realizing it. Uh-huh. And I corrected the Brooks part, but I didn't correct the Radley part. It's Brooks. Mm-hmm. Raley. I'm sorry.
I thought you were like spoonerizing that somehow.
No, I wasn't. I was referring to him by the nickname I've given him, which is Boo Radley.
I don't think, I might have also preferred Ottavino, but to your point, Brian, these sorts of relievers are rather interchangeable, I feel. I think you kind of put an offer out there and wait for one of them to take what you want to give, rather than chasing individual ones. There's something to be said about like the don't bet on your own knowledge here, right? Don't be so arrogant that your projection system or your knowledge is better than everyone else's and that you're going to be smarter or something. Just play the market when it comes to relievers because no one knows what the hell they're doing, right?
When you go after your preferred guy and jump the market on your preferred guy, rather than like just saying a lot of these guys are interchangeable, that's how you end up giving Jay Reese Familia a 3-year contract.
Exactly. 3-year, $30 million, whatever the hell it was.
That is how Frank Francisco is the cornerstone of your bullpen.
God, exactly.
Got the Frank Francisco years. Now, I still think they need another arm. Because Robertson is old and basically had a 2-year hiatus due to injuries prior to his bounce back last year. So I think I'd still like them to bring in another option back there. I know a lot of people are clamoring for Andrew Chafin. I don't know if that'd be my choice, but someone else that can maybe step up. I also like that. This is something that always annoyed me during the Sandy Alderson era, where the Mets had a good roster but refused to fill out the bullpen because they wouldn't give out multi-year deals. At this point, like, things have kind of changed about the Mets, where I think they're okay giving these shorter-term, higher AAV deals constantly because, A, they don't have a budget, and B, they're just kind of buying time until they're able to develop their own internal bullpen options, so you don't have to spend $30 million on a new bullpen every year. So overall, I think this is a good move, and would still like to see them add someone, but it's not a disaster now if they don't add another big option back there. Hey, Jerry's Familia is a free agent again.
He is,
oh,
yes.
Oh, boy. But no. I agree with Lucas. I think they're still one pen arm away from what I would call like feeling comfortable about the bullpen. Because I think that like you're at the point where you have, obviously you have your closer Edwin Diaz, you have him long term, you have your setup man David Robertson, and then you have Boo Radley. I'm just gonna keep calling him Boo Radley. You have Boo Radley, who's also a good seventh inning like guy. You need kind of one more of that level, and then you can fill out the rest of your middle relief with like Steven Nogasek and like, you know, cycle whatever dudes of the arms they've stockpiled on the fringes. You can fill the rest of your bullpen with that, whichever emerges, whatever cream rises to the top from that group. Then I feel like pretty comfortable, but they need like one more, like what we would call like, I guess, established arm.
I think we're probably looking at, I mean, they may be done at this point, which I wouldn't be a huge fan of, but if you're looking at a bullpen of Edwin Diaz, David Robertson, Brooks Raley, Boo Radley, whichever, Jeff Brigham, Drew Smith, Steven Nogosek, who's out of options, Zach Green, who they just selected in the Rule 5 draft, and who I actually like quite a bit, and then they add like another mid-tier lefty, that's not elite, but it's pretty solid.
That's pretty
and
good.
And they have more upper minors depth than they've had in years past with Steven Ridings, Eric Orzy, Bryce Montes de Oca. Some people might say Michael Antonez in that group as well.
Who'd they get from the Braves on waivers?
William Woods.
Yes, William Woods.
Who is in the top 25 of their prospects, by the way, and like was a fast riser before he got hurt. And his injury, he has had arm problems, let's be clear. So like it's not like he's without risk, but his most recent injury that cost him like the 2022 season was not an arm injury, it was an ankle injury. Yeah. So like the arm injury, yes, there's injury risk as far as like he's had all sorts of issues, but like his most recent issues are not arm issues. Otherwise, he'd be like, I don't know, like he would have had a chance to be like, Lucas would know better than me, but like I think that like if he's not injured and like pitches the entire 2022 season, he might have been like top 15 or 10 in the Braves system.
Yeah, the Braves system was thinned out a bit. I think that's possible. He might have even already been in the majors for them.
He made his major league debut last year, but he made like one appearance and then had that ankle injury.
To which I mean, he might have been like a consistent contributor, he would have stuck.
Yeah. Have we mentioned John Curtis yet?
No, I never even mentioned John Curtis.
No, he's part of the mix for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that middle of the bullpen, there's lots of players that can fit that. But I'm with you guys. They need one more like solid, reliable reliable reliever.
And probably someone left-handed, which is why people like Chafin a lot. Like, like they just don't have any left-handed pitchers. Like, I mean, they have Quintana now in the rotation, but like they don't, they just don't have any left-handed relievers. None of them. You need one. Like, I'm sorry. I mean, you need one.
They have Boo Radley now.
Yeah.
Is he a lefty?
He is a lefty.
Radley's arguably one of the best lefty relievers in baseball, which works out, but I do think you need two.
At that point,
looking at Curtis, who hasn't pitched in a couple of years, Joey Lucchese, who hasn't pitched in a couple of years, and you'd probably like to keep stretched out as a starter. David Peterson, ditto, wanting to keep him stretched out as a starter. There was another name I had in my head, and it has left.
But Curtis is righty, by the way. Curtis is not a lefty.
Curtis is righty? Why do I keep thinking he's a lefty?
I thought so too. I thought so. Yeah.
The lefty. Let's see.
On the Mets 40-man, there was also Taylor Salcedo.
Taylor. That's the guy they claimed from the Blue Jays. The other. Yes.
I forgot about him.
Yes, I knew we were missing someone in that discussion. So they have a couple.
Michael
names.
And I have been calling him Sauce because of Sauce Gardner on the Jets.
Yeah, there you go. So look, they have a couple interesting options, but I think we never mentioned Eliezer Hernandez, who might fit better in a bullpen role. This is the best relief depth the Mets have had in a decade, if not longer. Like being able to list off the top of our heads 10, maybe even 12 names to fill out four spots in the bullpen, and a lot of them having options, that's not common for this organization. But you do want those guys to be fighting for an optionable spot, not penciled in. Like, you don't want to be relying on them. And if one or two break out, that's great. And then they can step in for injured guys, or you just have a super pen. So I think they need to sign another lefty. It doesn't necessarily need to be a top-end guy. I, again, don't think Chafin is the best idea for a variety of reasons, but I wouldn't complain too much if that's
But the mustache, Lucas, the mustache.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah, can I read this tweet from Joel Sherman? This is so good.
Yeah,
David Robertson, representing himself, finalized the one-year $10 million deal with the Mets a few days back, flew to New York for a physical that he has already completed. He did it all himself.
Yes. Good for him. He flew the plane himself. Yep. Gave himself the physical. It all checked out. The lefty relievers are pretty bleak, actually. They may have to be Chafin. I wouldn't hate taking a chance on fixing Taylor Rogers or something.
I don't know if the Mets are ready for that project.
This is what we've been saying, right? They need time to build up their expertise. Now, Rogers was pretty good for most of last season and just kind of exploded at the end.
Yes.
But who can say?
I will say, like, if you're looking for a reclamation, if you're looking for a place to reclaim your past glory, the New York Mets with the biggest media market in the world maybe isn't the place to do that.
Yeah,
or is it?
Not. Yeah.
Or is it? Perhaps. Yeah.
I usually would have done a lot more digging into these sorts of names because I'm a sicko and I love thinking about reclamation projects, but haven't had as much time this year. Maybe it's Chafin. The point is, I think we all agree that they need to sign someone here, sign another fourth outfielder. And I think it seems, I am like oddly extremely confident they're going to sign Senga. And if it was just these two minor peripheral additions and Senga to round out the offseason, like that's an incredible roster.
That's pretty good. And they're already leaking to Martino that like they're going for Shohei Ohtani next.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Next offseason, which is like wild scenes.
The
like
Soto,
what...
the Soto part of that tweet made no sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I mean,
I just...
yeah, you have to expect Martino to have some nonsense in there. Come on.
Yes.
Like, I'm just like, what is this dream world that I am living in where this is the New York Mets? Like, I am flabbergasted.
The only thing we'll have to do is lobby the league for a second DH so that we don't have to lose Bogey to bring in Ohtani. And please, anyone who's listening, I'm extremely tongue-in-cheek. I do not actually care about losing Daniel Vogelbach if he's replaced with Shohei Ohtani.
I mean, keep him as a bench piece, just to have him around. He seems like a good
dude.
He's
so much fun. I love Daniel Vogelbach.
Yeah, I think Daniel Vogelbach and Shohei Ohtani interacting would be the most fun thing in the entire world, honestly.
That's a buddy comedy I didn't know I needed until right now.
I need it.
I have a better one. I want a buddy comedy with Francisco Alvarez and Daniel Vogelbach, just the two shortest, whitest, hardest swinging dudes on the planet out here. Rolling around solving crimes.
Yes.
And hitting dingers.
Yeah.
Did you know that Chasen Shreve pitched 26 innings for the 2022 Mets? I did not realize it was that many. Jesus.
That's a lot. That's
erase that from my memory.
Yeah, I memory hold that too.
That is the opposite of how much Sean Reed Foley pitched. I would have thought that Sean Reed Foley has pitched like 50 games for the Mets over the last two seasons. It's like 19. It is so small.
I mean, he pitched like three innings in 2022 before he got hurt.
Yeah.
I think he made like three or four appearances. That was it.
I feel like I watch way more spring training baseball than anyone else I know. And Sean Reed Foley was in like every televised spring training game had a Sean Reed Foley inning or two. So I feel like that's where this comes from for me. But I mean, I think we're all in agreement here. If they can get Senga and a fourth outfielder and a reliable bullpen piece, I think that's about as good of an offseason as you could have ever expected the Mets to have when you put everything together. I think if they don't go for another bullpen arm or a fourth outfielder I think they're going to sign more guys that will fill those roles. If they don't go as top shelf as we're hoping they go with those things, I can live with that. But this just feels like a completely different organization than a year ago. Yes. You know, when Steven Matz's agent spurned the Mets, we got Max Scherzer because of that. And, that felt special. But this feels like, I mean, Cohen truly doesn't give a fuck.
No.
Nope. I want to read a tweet from our old friend. And by friend, I mean nemesis. So frenemy, I guess. Mm-hmm. Matt Eholt, who I bet you forgot existed until this moment.
No, because I think I was blocked by him today. I'm about to be. He had tweeted like, I broke my cardinal rule of never tweeting, and I just tweeted back, imagine how much better the world would be if you could listen to your own advice.
he sure did tweet. And he tweeted, it is related to what you just said about Steve Cohen. So it's kind of amazing. Epler and the Mets need a $360 million payroll and hand out record contracts left and right just to field a complete team. And that is on par with Atlanta. We're talking $50 million more than anyone ever. Mets have to do that to win? ? And that tweet got ratioed to high heaven. And then his follow-up tweet was, welp.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, yes, they have to do that. Who cares? It's Steve Cohen. As Brian mentioned in the open, it's 2% of his net worth. So
I can at least understand other fans of other teams complaining about this, because it sucks, right, to see your rival franchise spending twice as much money as your franchise.
I used to complain about the Yankees spending all the time.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
We all did.
Complain about your own team not spending, not the other team spending, right? We've had this discussion a million times. All of these teams can spend $250 million a year, at least. And I'm being very generous to the teams. That Cohen is spending this much is probably a little bit extreme. I don't know that every team in the league could sustainably run a $350 million payroll, but that's neither here nor there. Complain about your own team running a garbage ass payroll and letting Freddie Freeman walk and all that. Who is Eholt even root for? I have no idea. Does he root for anyone?
No.
He roots for sadness.
Yeah. I mean, the better tweet is the much better tweet is from our friend Vaz, who tweeted, "Me, billionaire shouldn't exist. Steve Cohen spends lots of money on good players for the Mets. Me, one billionaire should exist."
Yes.
Which is
not wrong.
Correct.
He's not wrong.
That's correct.
All right. So if Senga signs in the next couple of days, we'll do another one of these. I don't know if there's any other move that I think the Mets could do that would get me that would get me excited enough to call in the reinforcements again and say, "We got to do it, folks. We got a pod." Is there anybody else
for the Will Smith signing podcast? Will Smith, I think, is now my preferred lefty relief target.
Okay,
he still exists.
Yes, he wasn't great, but and his splits are pretty bad now. But I think he's leverageable. Anyway, sorry, Brian. Go on.
No, what I was going to say though is there somebody else that you folks think is a possibility that we could actually see signing and need to get together to talk about?
I don't think there's any other free agent signing besides Senga, like major free agent signing that's left in them. But I suppose we could end up doing another one of these pods because they made a trade.
That's true.
I don't even know what they trade for at this point. Frankly.
I don't know. I'm guessing the only way they make what we would call a major trade is if they don't sign Senga and instead they try to trade for that pitcher.
Nope. I mean, maybe they could trade for an elite reliever.
I don't even know who that would be, though.
I don't know who that would be. And the Edwin Diaz trade working out aside, I'm still generally opposed to giving up a lot of prospects for high-end relief talent because the majority of the time it's not particularly sustainable. I mean, Edwin Diaz is probably the best reliever of his generation at this point. Like, give it a couple more years, maybe, but. Best reliever of his reliever generation, which is a pretty short time span, but that's like the obvious hole on the roster, and I don't know that it makes much sense to look. If they can turn Ronnie Mauricio into a high end reliever, I will drive Ronnie Mauricio to the destination because whatever. But I don't know that they should be looking to make a huge splash on that front.
Yeah, I mean. Just side note here, at what point can we say definitively that the Mets won the Edwin Diaz trade? Because there are still people who are litigating that online. Can we say it officially now without any qualification?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. But as I said, there are still people who are mad about this for whatever
reason. I've
been
saying it for a long time. I'm one of the only people that said it at the beginning.
I think there was, and I'm not saying Allison's wrong at the start, but I think there was an argument at the time that, hey, maybe don't do this. Relief pitching is volatile. Just go spend money instead. And at the time, the Mets were not, they were owned by the Wilpons and they weren't spending money. People then panned it too much when Kelenic blew up, right, to become the seventh best prospect in baseball, which I think he peaked at. The trade was way, way too criticized at that point. And now that Kelenic has come back down to earth, I think it's pretty clear that not come back down to earth, but shown he can't hit in the majors, it's pretty clear the Mets made the right decision. But I think there's an element of luck there, and I think there is a defensible position at the time that it wasn't necessarily the right thing to do. But long term, they've won this trade. There's no question.
Yeah. It's amazing to me, though, whenever Kelenic got a hit this year, you'd find somebody on Twitter being like, "Yup, LOL Mets."
And every time Diaz, this year Diaz wasn't blowing many saves, but every single time Diaz did anything bad, it was always, Jared Kelenic, da-da-da. And I was like, I literally never want to hear this man's name again.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lucas.
I'm taking a pretty obnoxious front office standpoint here by saying there's even a process based argument for why this maybe wasn't right at the time. But if you're doing a retrospective analysis based on results, which is essentially what you're doing when you cite every hit or every blown save, you're just wrong. The Mets have destroyed the Mariners in this trade, and it's not particularly close. Jared Kelenic is not a major league hitter, almost certainly never will be a major league caliber hitter, given the disaster, like guys who have gotten off to this level of horrific start do not figure it out, period. And Justin Dunn already got traded again for Castillo, and there's like a whatever bullpen arm, and just Gerson Bautista even still in baseball. So there is no way from a results perspective that the Mets did not absolutely win this trade.
And like, that's... even the process argument, like at the time, it actually, like, the arguments against the trade really, to me, had nothing to do with Diaz and Kelenic. It had to do with taking on Robinson Cano's money when you were still a Wilpon-owned Mets team. To me, they won the trade the second Steve Cohen became the owner of the Mets and Robinson Cano's money didn't matter anymore. And that's before Edwin Diaz's 2022 season. And before Edwin Diaz parlayed that into 5 years, $102 million. Like, I'm not pretending that I knew that I had a crystal ball and knew all these things at the time that, like, Edwin Diaz would be as good as he was in 2022 and end up with the Mets long term, because unquestionably now that Edwin Diaz is going to end up spending all this time with the Mets, like, that outweighs everything else. But like I say, the Mets won the trade the second Steve Cohen became owner and Robinson Cano's money didn't matter anymore.
That's fair.
That's a great point to end on too. It's good to be a Mets fan today.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jacob DeGrom, yes. Who?
So maybe we'll do another one of these soon, but we're gonna try and keep this breaking news thing going. Not necessarily with, I don't want to commit Lucas and Allison to doing these with me, but you're trying to do, you know, with whoever's around, and these two are always invited, top of the list, great podcasters. But you know, I don't want to commit them to every breaking news story, dropping what they're doing to come and talk about the Mets. But we're going to try to do more of these pods. Go to Amazing Avenue for more analysis. We'll have lots of words on all of these moves over the next couple of days. And remember, until next time, let's go Mets.